Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and as always, I'm joined by my excellent panel. Well, except I'm... Oh no, there he is. He turned up at the last moment.
With all the snow we've had, I forgot that I got to get out there and do a little shoveling before the show began.
Okay, from Corruption City, Youngstown, Ohio, we have the amazing Sam Moffey. And Sam, welcome.
Thank you, Simon. Again, I'm sorry I'm late. We got hit with a storm, and I had to get onto a little shoveling because I know I'm going to be talking and listening and making people very happy and sad today on the radio show.
And from the City of Angels, we have well-known, well-respected attorney, Peter Haven. Peter, welcome to the program.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that Sam is having a snow day. It's bright, sunny, cool, and clear out here in California, which is a typical winter day for us. That's what makes us so hale and hearty and tough, is the weather.
Oh, I tell you, it was the two storms we've had, one before Thanksgiving and this one, you know, with that heavy, heavy, thick snow coming down, if you're familiar with it. Brutal on the lower back.
I actually wish we would get some snow here. We're lucky if we get rainfall.
I know. I lived in San Diego for 9 months, and I didn't see one raindrop.
Tell you, it's depressing. I love the rain. I wish we'd get more.
I'm from the state that the classic cult movie, The Toxic Avenger, was made, New Jersey, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I was a little disappointed. I was hoping that Sam could be a little more selfish and keep the snow, because we did get the tail end of his snowstorm. My area only got like 6 inches, but a lot of other areas around me got a lot of freezing rain and about a foot of snow. So, you know, Sam, keep the snow.
Poor Sam.
I don't want it.
And Sam, we started this discussion last week, and it's all about Coconut Grove. Do you want to give us the thumbnail sketch of the story?
Where we stand now? Or do you want to recap? How would you like me to do it?
Just a quick recap.
Okay. On December 2nd, I filed a federal lawsuit in the Northern District Court of Ohio in regard to my rights being violated. A bar that was owned by my parents and that I was an employee at, called the Coconut Grove in Youngstown, Ohio. It's been around for 70 years. The second oldest liquor license after Prohibition in Youngstown. We got it. The neighborhood had seen much, much better days over the years and has gradually turned into a very bad neighborhood, a very tough neighborhood, and it's very difficult to make business there for anybody. We the state of Ohio is the chief government agency for obtaining liquor licenses, overseeing liquor licenses, and the ultimate authority about liquor licenses. And in October of 2011, a young man by the name of Jerome Miller. Simon, what's his AKA?
Noodle.
Was assassinated in the parking lot after some exchanging some words in the bar with some people. because I bought the Coconut Grove where you always went to get food. That was at the he was asking people in the bar, but after exchanging some words with someone there, after he got his wings to go out, he was assassinated. The city council, the mayor's office, the block watch people, the law department all blamed that on the bar. They rejected the renewal of the liquor license in December of 2011. It took 5 months for a hearing to take place. At that hearing, it was the police department weighed heavily on the homicide of Mr. Noodles and some other calls that were kind of sketchy at best. Some had taken place in the bar, some had taken place around the bar, but there were 56 calls in a three-year period. The state shut the bar down, didn't shut it down, denied us our liquor renewal. Excuse me. So that meant, according to the attorney of the bar owners, that when the next January, which was in 2013, the bar would not be able to operate and would have to be shut down pending appeal. The bar owners appealed. We had numerous delays. Meanwhile, I and a coworker were continuing to buy liquor from our state liquor agent, where the state of Ohio controls the liquor distribution in the state. Bar owners, permit holders must go to a designated liquor agency to buy their liquor. They cannot buy it from anywhere they want to. They cannot buy it at a retail outlet and sell it wholesale. They have to buy it at a state-run agency. We continue to buy liquor there and fight the allegations and try to keep the bar open to get the permit back in our name, back in good gracious. That then, 24th, execution was denied, which we thought we were going to appeal again, and we continued to operate, buy liquor, keep the bar open. There were no problems there. At one point in September, we received a letter from the Department of Liquor Control that said that they had found bugs in the bottle. That's a very famous thing in the state of Ohio to raise revenue for the state. Liquor control agents go to all the bars or targeted bars, whatever they want to do, and they look to see if there's any gnats hanging around the more sweeter drinks that could be sitting on a shelf. In our case, it was slow gin. The bottle was probably 3 years old, probably should have been thrown away, our fault. It was called slow, and some gnats were found there. They confiscated the bottle, fined us $100, or gave us the option to shut down for 3 days in late October of 2012. We paid the fine and continued to operate. On election night 2012, coworkers called my cell up at 7 o'clock or so, said the vice squad was in the bar. They were needed and were taking everything out of it and shutting the bar down. Being the smart man I am, I took my wife with me because I probably would have been thrown in jail that night knowing my temper. And my wife accompanied me up there. We were met by three uniformed police officers who let us in. They showed us IDs. They were inside the bar. There were two vice squad officers being very nasty, rude, and whatnot, and enjoying what they were doing. I asked them to see the search warrant. They did not have a search warrant. They then huddled, and one of the officers left. He returned back a half hour with a letter that I had received in the mail from our attorney that the state had sent denying a stay of execution. I said, "What is this?" And he said, "This is the search warrant." I go, "No, I've seen enough television and movies to say there's no judge signature down here." And then I started to argue with him. He said, "If I continue to argue with him, he's going to arrest me right then and there." My wife backed me off. We let them take everything out. And just shaking our heads in disbelief that, there was no foot warrant. And the officer said that the law director and the chief of police said we've been operating since August 24th illegally to date this letter. I then 4 days later at my other location in Austintown, on a Friday night at 7:30, those same vice squad officers plus another John Doe number three showed up, asked me to sign paperwork to say that basically that I was guilty of illegally storing booze or beer. I can't remember the exact charge off the top of my head. I refused to sign it. They let me, they cupped me, let me my Mirandas, and paraded me in front of my bar patrons, customers, made a big show of it, drove me downtown to the county jail, booked me, abused me the whole time, and was let out that night. the owners of Liquor License hired a counsel to file a mandamus action and all sorts of stuff in the county court, and we did that on November 15th. The day before that, that day of the court hearing was at 3 o'clock in front of a magistrate. At 9 o'clock in the morning, I went to that liquor agent I was going to, and I asked, can I buy some wholesale liquor here? And the agent said, yes. So I bought some liquor and brought the receipt with me to the court, thinking that my lawyer would want to use it in an aha moment, or gotcha moment. He refused to. I don't know why. To this day, I don't know why. We went back. Basically, the case was dropped by my parents, who owned the liquor license. They didn't want to give the attorney more money. We kind of felt he was shaking us down. Didn't do a bad job with his complaint, but sure wanted a lot of money. And I ended up pleading in January of this year, this past January. I pled to fourth degree misdemeanor, and that was that. And then December, I found a lawyer on a similar case in another community, and we piggybacked, and we wanted to hire this attorney, but he wanted too much money, and ended up, and my parents did not want to, being in their 80s in New York, didn't feel like they wanted to come to Youngstown, Ohio, and get handcuffed, mismanhandled, or whatnot, by the Youngstown Police Department, and the political system were very afraid of it. So they decided not to participate in the lawsuit, and I filed on my own with the help of a neighborhood lawyer, and we filed in federal court for violation of my Fourth and Fourteenth Amendment rights, and that's where we stand.
Okay, Peter, obviously you're next on my list. What do you reckon?
Is it still snowing there?
Did I talk that long?
No, I'm kidding.
It's okay. But the Browns are losing, though, I hear.
Well, I mean, you know, the sun came up today, so of course the Browns are going to lose. As Sam was describing all of this, I actually pulled up a copy of Sam's complaint, and I was just walking through it, looking at it as he was describing these events. Now, Sam, one of the things that your complaint says is that in January of this year, you entered into some sort of plea agreement with, the Department of Liquor Control. Is that right?
Not with the City of Youngstown.
The City of Youngstown. And that right. Was a plea in connection with what exactly?
With what they charged me, that would be the date when
they
raided the bar.
When they arrested you for refusing to sign that form?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. And what if I may ask, what was the penalty associated with that plea? Did you have to pay a fine or something?
Yeah, $175 fine.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. I don't know. Most of the conduct that your complaint is based on is based on incidents that surround that particular event. I still think it's crazy that they tried to arrest you, or that they did arrest you, for refusing to sign a document. What was the document that they wanted you to sign again?
The document was that basically what they did on that I was illegally selling liquor, illegally storing liquor and illegally allowing it to be sold at a premise.
At a premise where supposedly your license had been rendered ineffective, but it turns out, in retrospect, at least your understanding is that your license hadn't been rendered ineffective.
That's correct.
Yeah. So I'm just curious as to the, you know, for me as a lawyer, one of the things that's interesting is we have this one sense where you took a plea with the city with respect to the charge of illegally dispensing liquor. Now, what's the current status of your liquor license now?
The liquor license was we did not renew it. I had the on December 20th of last year, the state liquor agency, we notified the state that we were not going to renew the liquor license for what would have been 2013 and the first month of 2014.
Yeah.
And they came up. I had a meeting with the state agent. His name is Steve Arnold. I gave him an operating permit. He gave me a receipt for that. And then they sent a letter to the liquor agency and the beer distributors and said you can no longer sell. As of December 20th, 2012, as effective immediately, you could not sell liquor or beer or wine to this location. It's permit as they voluntarily turned in their permit. What to that effect?
Yeah. Well, you know, a couple of things that strike me. One is I think it's interesting that I'm not sure about how the interplay is going to work. On the one hand, you've pled to some technical violation of unauthorized use of liquor, and I don't know to what extent that will have a back-reaching effect on the civil claims. You know, to the extent that one of the defenses to all of this was I was authorized to sell liquor. Now there's a plea indicating that you agreed that there was an unauthorized sale of liquor. And the other thing is that it certainly goes to the damages issue of the case that you know, you didn't renew the liquor license, so it's not like the loss of the liquor license is an item of damage that you can claim. On the other hand, I think the action, personally, among other things, of arresting you for refusing to sign a document, to me, that's just unbelievable. And, you know, if I have a full understanding of all the facts surrounding that, to me, that seems like a clear Section 1983 violation. And for those who don't know it, that refers to Section 1983 of the United States Code, which basically where a state official under color of state authority basically deprives someone of a constitutional right. And, you know, to me, I just I can't understand for the life of me why anybody would be arrested for refusing to sign a document. I do think that the notion that they presented you with a copy of a letter and called that a search warrant is also a Section 1983 violation, in addition to all the other claims that you've got. So, you know, I'm definitely interested to see how this thing pans out.
Okay, poor Bill is probably, you know, sat back in his chair going, whoa, I don't know nothing about this.
Well, just so you know, I don't know nothing about it either, but, you know, I spent last night at a Holiday Inn Express, so all that sounded pretty good.
So, Bill, you know, what's your... first impressions.
Well, again, it's what I said last week. You know, somebody's out to get Sam, and that there is some kind of conspiracy going on there to probably obtain his properties. My gut feeling would be for some kind of urban renewal, and he has prime real estate, especially after the story of that they took down his other piece of property across the street. There's been allegations that this took place in some poor areas within New Jersey. They kind of kept it low-key, but there was a particular city in which the they would have a rash of fires, and the fires would burn down property and render them useless, and it was led to political people and to the fire company who let the places burn down. They didn't respond to them quickly, and even allegations that they were the ones that started the fire. So I'm just a suspicious sort of a person.
Well,
you know, it's interesting. I have to admit, sometimes it's strange to me the way things work, but this is the third or fourth case that's been brought to my attention recently regarding, and it's from all over the United States, this is the third case that's been brought to my attention regarding charges of basically police going beyond their proper authority. And, you know, another case was presented to me recently in Nevada involving police who got a call to a residential community outside of Vegas, apparently, and there was a call of a domestic dispute, and for some reason that I can't understand, it escalated into some type of standoff, and the police asked a neighbor to have tactical access to the neighbor's house, and the neighbor refused. And the allegations in the complaint are that the police rushed in and basically shot everybody with pepper shot, and I've never heard of pepper shot before, and basically commandeered the residence and arrested the occupant. Now, this is the neighbor we're talking about. just to get tactical advantage, and if you're interested, there's actually some news items floating around. One of the theories of the case that the neighbor filed a lawsuit on was an alleged violation of the Third Amendment, which nobody could recall what the Third Amendment said, and it has to deal with the military has no right to commandeer a home during times of peace. Yeah. And I didn't even know that. I had to look it up. And then I'm involved with another case where police got a phone call in California to respond to a scene of a crime and or to exercise a search warrant, and they appear to have exercised the search warrant on the wrong domicile, and the place they entered, the occupant was the legal owner of a number of firearms. And they confiscated all the firearms and arrested him, even though apparently the search warrant didn't even apply to that person's residence. So these are all the allegations of the case, but it does strike me as interesting that suddenly I'm hearing from different sectors across the United States these allegations of police engaging in excessive force, going beyond the color of authority, and essentially abusing their authority. And I find it interesting. I don't know if it's a trend or not, but it's something that obviously we all need to be concerned about.
Okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to reach out to the phone lines. We have someone from the 918 area code. What's your name, and what is your question or comment for us?
My question or comment is that I've been hearing about the cops, and my name is Layla, but I just wanted to ask you, like, tell you some questions. I've been hearing, and this apartment complex been shooting down in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There was a fire over in this one place, and I just wanted to tell you on the broadcast about the fires and the shootdowns and cops doing extra bit business now on, and they are starting to rack up on people now because a lot of people are starting to drunk driving and riding without their seatbelts, so the cops are really trying to rack down.
Okay.
Now, Layla, is this did I hear you say Broken Arrow, Oklahoma? Is that where you're calling from?
Broken Arrow, Oklahoma?
Yeah, I apologize. I thought I heard you say that you were calling from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. I may have misheard that. I apologize.
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Tulsa, okay. And if I understand correctly, you're basically indicating that you're seeing increased levels of police activity in your area, and do you feel that some of it is excessive or improper? Is that your impression?
Well, yeah, kind of. It's my impression that they're starting to crack down on people. I just wanted to let everyone know that cops are starting a new plan like how they used to when people used to drink drive and they didn't know they were drunk driving. And they were letting them know. I just want to let you guys, everyone, know about them cracking down on the people who are drunk driving and cigarette throwing out of the windows, because if you throw out cigarettes out of the windows, they are going to start a fire, and fire departments are going to come there, and sometimes fire departments don't be able to go there fast enough to reach them places. So I just want to let y'all know that that they're cracking down more about cigarette dropping, littering, and drunk driving and all that.
I see nothing wrong with any of that. You know,
I'm glad you let us know that, and I tend to agree with Simon. I think that's a good thing. That's a good thing. But it is good to warn people about it too, because you know, I'm sure the police don't want to have to make these arrests or issue these citations. I'm sure they just want people to not drink and drive and not throw their cigarette butts out the window. So I think those are good things. And I'll also add that I don't think people should use their cell phones while they drive. But
that's one thing they're trying to crack down, because a lot of people are staying at the stoplight talking on the phone, and then when it turns green, they stop talking on the phone. They don't know it's green.
Do you see people texting on the phone when you see them drive? Do you see that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That to me is incredibly dangerous, and I see people doing that all the time, and you know, it's really unfortunate. This is one thing where technology isn't helping us in the automobile, and I just generally think people shouldn't use their cell phones at all in the automobile. It's just too much of a distraction.
Yeah, they should be able to use phones at home. If there's an important call, probably pull over and use it, but do not text while driving, because they can get in big wreck.
About
the cigarette throwing, my family member, someone was driving past, they threw a cigarette, and it started a big fire.
It did, huh?
In the house. Yeah, and the house almost burned down.
Wow. And did they catch the person who threw the cigarette out of his car?
Yes.
Or her car? They did. Wow, that's pretty amazing. Well, I think while I'm at it, I think people should also stop smoking too. But, you know, that's I'm probably alone in that regard.
Yeah.
Hey, Cola, I want to thank you. Let's get back to the program.
Thank you very much, Layla.
You're welcome.
Okay. Where were we? Oh, yeah. I decided that Sam Moffey was a good friend of mine. So, in typical Simon fashion, I decided I'd jump in feet first. So I got on Google and looked up the Youngstown Police website. They don't have one, by the way. Everything is under the Youngstown.com government office. It was frustrating. And, you know, my first thought was to call the office number, looking for the PIO, Public Information Officer. Oh, well, that was harder than I thought. Number was busy. I tried the non-emergency number and spent Lord knows how long pressing, you know, one for this, two for that, and I got absolutely nowhere. All I wanted to do was talk to a person. And so, you know, I was kind of pissed off. I was getting nowhere in a hurry. So I went back to the Youngstown city site, and I just couldn't be denied the opportunity of, you know, ruining someone's day. I finally found the phone number of the police chief's secretary. She was a nice lady, and she promised to pass on my message to the detective in charge of the investigation into the fatal shooting of Jerome Miller. I was absolutely amazed. 5 minutes later, my phone is ringing. And I don't have a caller ID on my phone. Jen, my wife, does. She says, "It's for you. It's from Youngstown." It was none other than the chief of police, gentleman by the name of Rod Foley. I smelled a rat. The cops, particularly important cops, do not call you back. You know, and I'm hardly CNN, and I'm most certainly, you know, was not a local news organization, you know, local newspaper. Sam, does that, you know, bring a chuckle to your mind?
Yes. I'm surprised you called back, Simon.
Oh, it was within 5 minutes.
I mean, it just and that you had conversation. So I appreciate what you did. You know, you're a good investigative reporter. Your blogs are awesome. The Blogger News Network gets the word out there, whether it's about the Coconut Grove or Youngstown or some, you know, anything. And that's the way things are now. But when you told me in an email, if I may share, that both Detective Patton and Foley know I have filed a lawsuit, you would think they would have been told, "We cannot comment. There's a lawsuit pending." I was surprised they yakety-yakety with you.
Oh.
That's the nature of the beast, I guess, and that just blows me away. Peter, would you agree, and then Bill, that, you know, when I've been the subject of a lawsuit, whether the plaintiff or defendant, the first thing my counsel has said is, you don't make any comments.
It's not clear to me that the police knew that they were being contacted in any way regarding you. They may have just been responding to a phone call, and that's probably their standard operating procedure, or it could be.
Good point.
I have no idea. And, you know, It would be remiss of the police not to return a call if somebody called them. You know, I don't think they know why Simon's calling, but I could be wrong about that.
I think I made it perfectly clear why I was calling.
Well, you mean you? I'm sorry. Did you leave a voicemail or did you leave a message with a receptionist?
I had a nice conversation with the chief of police's secretary.
I see.
Yeah,
and you indicated basically that you were a press person, and you were calling to ask them questions about this particular issue.
Right.
And then he called you back, and what exactly did the chief of police tell you?
Well, no, I didn't want to talk to the chief of police. Right? I wanted to talk to the public information officer, but apparently they don't have one. The young lady told me that the name of the detective I needed to talk to was Detective Patton. And I said, great. You know, if you could pass the message on to him that I would be interested in talking to him about the demise of the Miller guy, it would be greatly appreciated. So, you know, I was truly surprised when Rod Foley called me back.
And what exactly did you guys talk about?
Not about much of anything. Yeah, Rod Foley clearly knew very little. I shouldn't say that. He wasn't prepared to say anything about the Coconut Grove incident. And, yeah, so I just let it go. Yeah, and hung up the phone and went, whoa, that was kind of strange.
I get it.
Sam, you live in the area. Ever talked to Mr. Foley?
No. I intend to be present when we do a deposition with him now. If he's still a chief of police, or whatever, the new mayor is considering replacing him. That's a rumor going around. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I will look forward to my attorney questioning him because it is hearsay. John Doe, Vice Squad John Doe, told me and my wife that the letter from the state on August 24th of 2012 was his search warrant, and the chief of police said that I've been operating illegally, I've been selling booze illegally, we've been storing it illegally, and that's all he needed. So it'll be interesting to know why he thinks that's a search warrant, and, maybe he hasn't been properly, it would not surprise me. Peter said something earlier about this color of law, these police officers overstepping their boundaries from that 1983, Peter, the case?
Section 1983. I think it's 42 United States Code, Section 1983.
Section 1983, okay. Yeah. And it's interesting, you brought those two other cases that came up, and probably another dozen that we don't even know about that are buzzing around, and probably maybe even more, is that maybe part of the problem is the police officers are not being properly educated anymore or don't care because they're not accountable. And, so some of these cases that you've heard were the old days, there was the Miranda rights, there was the this, there was the that, and suspects had rights, you had due process of law, and it seems to be gone. They don't care. And it's maybe because they're not getting continuing education. Maybe Chief Rod Foley, Simon, is just, is not that intelligent. Went up to, the good old boy network, made him the chief of police. He's been there the longest. And isn't really familiar with a lot of these things. Doesn't know how to handle this stuff. Thinks that letter, because someone from the law department said, ha-ha, this letter gives us carte blanche to do whatever we want to do to the Coconut Grove, go get it, and otherwise your job's in jeopardy, and your pension, and your PERS, and that's all they care about. So they just follow the leader. I don't know, because I'm totally so shocked that the police officers And if you could believe, had been quoted in some media things as some of the things he said, but what these documents were. And it's really funny that nobody from the city ever checked with the Department of Safe, the department in Ohio, because Ohio controls the booze, the Department of Public Safety, that is the law enforcement arm of the Control Commission. They were never present, never present. And I've been in the bar business since 1999. Whenever there's been a problem at any bar, whether I've been in the bar, at a bar, working at a bar, whatever, someone from the Department of Public Safety is always there with local police as the backup or whatnot, because then that local police authority gets some piece of the revenue, a piece of the fine or whatnot. In my case, and in the Coconut Grove's case, never ever was there anybody from the Department of Public Safety or the liquor control agent from the civil side or from the criminal side ever involved in the investigations that were allegedly going on. And that's always been mind-boggling to me, that the police would decide to take total control of this and not include the state or authorities. And I think that, again, as my attorney said, Peter, that they're probably not going to even know, but there's a potential they're that dumb. Just because they wear badges doesn't mean, and our police officers and carry guns doesn't mean they pay attention to everything and go to the right things and follow the rules. I mean, we all know about bad cops, right? We've all seen the movies. We've all seen Serpico. We've all read the book Serpico. That means it doesn't happen in every town in America, and getting worse now because government is so in your face now. Mr. Compton.
Okay. But I want to continue the story. You know, 5 minutes after my nice chat with my new best friend, Rod Foley, my phone rings again. This time, it was Detective Patton. You know, apparently he's the lead dude on finding the killer of young Mr. Miller. But yeah, he played down the fact that he has no idea who killed Noodle, but it was very clear that he was happier than a clam that the Coconut Grove was out of business. You know, in his mind, you know, that establishment was at the center of all of the problems of the south side of Youngstown. Any thoughts on that one, Sam?
Yeah. Detective Patton's had it out for me for a long time. I do not know why. I don't know the guy. His testimony at the hearing was pathetic, and on cross-examination he was ripped apart. But again, they still found against us. And Simon, I will be mailing that to you. Peter, I have mailed you a copy of that. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it.
I will.
Yeah, and he just, and it's funny as you say that, because
hello?
Sorry. Yeah, to my own, you know, reputation and whatnot. Was it a perfectly run bar? Yeah, in the 50s and 60s and 70s it was. Okay? As the neighborhood changed in the 80s, 90s, into the 2000s, it has, the clientele's changed, the economy's changed, the neighborhood's changed, the bar's changed. Do we want a perfect place? No. Were there problems there? Yeah, there certainly were. But guess what? The only liquor violation in 13 years was the butts in the bottle. No underage drinking. No selling after hours. No, you know, no prostitution. We weren't. There's so many bars in this town, in this state, that you read about all the time that are actively involved the owners, the managers, the employees are actively involved in drug sales behind the bar. They're promoting the usage of all that, promoting illegal gambling. Basically, Cotton, for some reason, if you guys are familiar with the movie The Cotton Club, thought I was Bob Hoskins, like I'm Bob Hoskins' character from The Cotton Club, and that's the Coconut Grove one. That he doesn't do it. But the only people that went in there were gangsters, were bad people, were evil people, were drug dealers, were prostitutes, and whatnot. And he's always said that. Other people, you know, I've heard the feedback. He had, I don't know what it is, maybe he wasn't served there when he was underage or something. I don't know what it is or what it is, but this Patton has had it out for maybe because he can't solve the crime. There's a lot of unsolved, and I'm going to call him what African-Americans tell me what the Noodles killing was and other killings in Youngstown. Assassinations because the police department and the law department doesn't take care of, they're not going to solve the crime. So they do it themselves. Vengeance. It's just like, that's what the African-Americans tell me what this murder was. I believe it. Well, we dug up some other stuff about Noodles that no one wants, Patton didn't tell you about, right, did he? Didn't know that you would know that. We dug up all sorts of stuff from some of these gangsters.
He really didn't want to talk about Noodle.
Yeah, and the other, because he hasn't solved the crime, so he has to blame it on me. And, you know, you think about it. Why as a bar owner or a business owner, why can't I get protection under the law? Do they pick and choose with the police department? You know, if illegal guns are being, the way I look at it, isn't the Coconut Grove and myself, aren't we the victim of the crime that was committed? The business, the area, and whatnot. How do you blame the killing and the crime on the location? If that's the case, then Walmart on Friday after Thanksgiving should be shut down all across America. They should find all the crimes, the beatings, the killing, you know, the shootings and all that sort of stuff. How can you blame? I mean, I pay taxes. The employees pay taxes. Aren't we entitled to police protection, too, if the city can't? And by the way, Simon and Bill and Peter, listening audience, since the Coconut Grove has been shut down, do you think crime has gone away on the south side?
Well, according to Detective Patton, it's way better. Boy, I wish I had that recorded.
The crime has actually increased in the neighborhoods, and statistics have said that. There hasn't been as many assassinations or murders, but all other crime in that community, in that specific neighborhood, and in what's considered the south side, has escalated. Okay, so that, and it's spread. So there's no stop. You can't blame it on a business and let that poor person, and that's, you know, there's no nexus. I mean, I don't know how they thought that, hey, and even the morons at the Department of the Liquor Control Commission believed it. One murder in a parking lot, 56 phone calls in 3 years, of which some of them I can read in some of what Patton said in cross-examination, had nothing to do with it. Yeah,
and there's
other bars that have had multiple killings, worse crime, tons of underage drinking. There's no one shut them down.
So, you know, these 56 incidents that you talk about, they weren't, violent crimes or whatnot. They were, can you give us a sense of what those were?
Sure, okay. They made a big deal out of it. They went back for 3 years and checked every police call to the Coconut Grove. Now, I want to tell everybody in the listening audience and on the panel, there were four apartments above the Coconut Grove. Four people on fixed income lived above there, nice tenants, elderly people, white, older men, all lived there for about 10 years. When I had to shut the bar down, it was all on one utility, one gas, one water, one electric. They had to go find other places to live. A third of the phone calls were from their apartment based upon they locked themselves out, someone was breaking into their apartment. They thought one fell down, one had a heart attack, one forgot to take their medicine, there were medical calls there. Legitimate elderly apartment that happens all, every day in America. The 911 calls are made by tenants in apartment buildings or people at home. A third of the phone calls had to do with that. One of the 911 calls is made by the block watch captain and his wife, who can't stand me, and if you read their testimonies, because the bar has gone black. That's not true. It's about 50-50. They did not like that. They lived there for 30 or 40 years. They liked the old days when it was all Italian and Hungarian and white. Well, you know, that's the type of mentality I'm dealing with here. They once called 911 because they did not like, and I said this last Sunday, they did not like the way the snow was being plowed and pushed into the street. They called 911. Now, I will tell you something that the attorney for the Coconut Grove had patented. Talk about, that was cross-examination. It's very important, I think, because Detective Patton admitted that the Coconut Grove has been in existence in this neighborhood for several decades, and it is somewhat of a landmark in this neighborhood. He agreed that the Coconut Grove could be used as a reference location in reporting any kind of criminal activity taking place near that premise. You want me to read that again?
Say that again, yeah.
Okay. On cross-examination, Detective Patton admitted that the Coconut Grove has been in existence in this neighborhood for several decades, and it is somewhat of a landmark in this neighborhood. He agreed that the Coconut Grove could be used as a reference location in reporting any kind of criminal activity taking place near the premise.
What mean a reference location when people say, like, where is it, and you say, well, I'm like a mile from the Coconut Grove or something?
Exactly.
Like that.
And 20 of the 56 police calls that they referenced were made because the Coconut Grove was used as a reference point. So someone made a 911 call, and they said, I'm right near the Coconut Grove. What popped up on the, where did they send the police to? Where did the dispatchers send the cops to? The Coconut Grove. Okay. Even though the incident is a mile away.
So if this is a witch hunt, so to speak, they're basically conspiring all against you to get rid of you. What's the motivation? Why you?
I think it's three reasons. Is one of them? I used to be very politically active. Not as much as I used to be, and not in the city of Youngstown, but I was politically active. The lawyer for the Coconut Grove and Bill's Place, he's the current member of the Democratic Party. I was very active with him. I was doing stuff, but not in the city of Youngstown's politics, not in anything else. But I was actively helping him in politics and doing some other things. That's the only thing I can think about politically. Bill brings up a great point. Maybe they want your property. 6 months ago, the Catholic Diocese started kicking the tires to see if they wanted to buy it and turn it into a place to train people on welfare to learn how to be in the restaurant business. Nothing came from that. But it just popped into my mind when Bill said that last week. Gee, isn't that funny? And the councilman who helped shut us down was holding the hand of the bishop as they tore the premises. They wanted me to give them the place, and we refused to do that, and that was the end of that. I don't know what else it is because I don't know any of the people there. I hardly do anything there. I haven't pissed off anybody that I know about, or at least that someone has come to me. I also think some of these do-gooders think by shutting down certain locations, crime will go away. I do believe that's part of the motivation. And I think Simon kind of drew on that out when he talked to Patton, that if they shut down, they believe this. I think it's been taught somewhere in police authorities, that let's shut down certain locations and all crime will go away. I really believe they think that in regards to the Coconut Grove. That's going to be the number one thing that comes out that in their emails and all the other things, because in one of the 56 calls that was made, police report that was made, when he's testifying, he says there was another shooting near the Coconut Grove. Okay, well, on cross-examination, Patton agreed that the shooting that took place on August 13, 2011, were made by kids in the neighborhood and had nothing to do with the bar. He agreed that the report indicates that shots were fired by kids driving by the premise. Okay? But the police reports were all anti, they referenced the Coconut Grove, and the majority of them had nothing to do with the Coconut Grove. Yet they hung their hat of guilt on the bar being a bad place without really diving into detail. They didn't want to dive into detail. And it's obvious to me that since that bar has been shut down and I've been put out of business over there and lost a great deal of income and been embarrassed and arrested and all that sort of stuff, crime is rampant over there.
Okay. I can hear Bill humping in the background. Bill, what do you think about all of this?
Again, there's something going on there that's against Sam. There's always alternative motives. Greed seems to be such a motivation for so many people. I really feel for Sam on this. It's I don't know what to say. I hear this all the time from I know someone else that's a bar owner kind of locally here in Jersey, and they keep coming to him and deny him things like renovations of his bathroom for his bar, and come after him for a lot of things. And we realized that in that particular town, they're trying to put in a new commuter train stop, and they want that piece of property for to be a modern downtown type situation in a town that really doesn't have a downtown, and they want to convert it over and put in condos and all kinds of planning, which seems to sprout around here near train stations. So, you know, there's something going on, and it may take 5 years before we figure out what really happens there. And I just feel so bad for Sam that he's in the middle of all this.
Oh, I don't feel sorry for Sam. Sam's a big boy.
Well, Bill, I appreciate the kind words. There's only one bad thing you said. I just had to settle before 5 years.
Well, I think that sometimes they have a lot of ambition to do this, but you know they have to mess with a lot of other people's lives in your former neighborhood there. In order to put everything through, you know, I think they think it's a great way to go, but there's going to be other people that are going to dig their feet in, and they're not going to be able to get the property or anything around that area in order to proceed with what they're trying to do. And it may take 5 years before you figure out, that was the real plan.
That's an excellent point. Who knows if they're assembling. There's a lot of vacant property. There's a lot of vacant land. There is a ton of money that's come available to cities like this. I agree with you. But the city of Youngstown, there is, Peter, I finally figured out what it is, what I pissed everybody off about.
Well, first of all, the kind of guy who would piss anybody off.
I'm also, let me tell you something. I'm also a hell of an ally. Okay.
I agree.
Okay. I finally remembered what it is, and it is part of the law. It's mentioned in the lawsuit, and I just completely forgot about it. After the hearing on the letter was received on the 24th of August of 2012. There were some bars in downtown Youngstown built. You made me think a light bulb went off in my head. The city doesn't want to assemble in the neighborhood. They don't care about the neighborhood. They think the downtown has to be an oasis, and they've turned it into an oasis with all sorts of tax dollars going to open up bars, going to open up an entertainment district, it's called, where people get liquor licenses at half price, all sorts of favors. The cops are down there. For free, to protect the suburbanites. We don't get that in the neighborhood. However, there was a bar down there called the Lemon Grove. I remember why I got in trouble. And in August, the Lemon Grove received all sorts of grants and goodies and monies from the the city and because it was going out of business. And as a matter of fact, the city of Youngstown helped this guy actually get some leftover stimulus money from Obama. Well, I got a copy of his application, this kid's application. It was a joke. It was an absolute joke, and what he was putting up for collateral and whatnot, and it was all because the city did not want to have this bar shut down after they invested so much in the image. Well, I wrote a certified letter to the for public records request to the mayor of Youngstown, the councilman, and everybody else. It's calling it a tale of two groves. You've heard of a tale of two cities? I called it a tale of two groves. And I asked for all sorts of public records requests legitimately. I wasn't nasty in my letter, right, what I asked for, but it's my right to petition my government. It is my right to ask for public records requests, you know, under the Sunshine Laws and all that, and paid for them with my, out of my pocket and whatnot. Well, it was after that letter that things got really sticky, if you want to really look at a point. But that was it. That's what pissed them all off. More than my political leanings, more than who my attorney was, more than what was going on at the bar, because little did we know until sometime this year, the mayor who's leaving office, I had asked for a record of all the monies given to all the bars in downtown Youngstown through the Department of Economic Development, okay? A lot of money. Well, we did not know it at the time, but the mayor's son had received $40,000 from the city of Youngstown to open up a bar. And the mayor himself even voted on the money. We did not even know that till this last a year later. I wasn't even interested in the mayor's son. I wasn't even interested in the mayor's sons voting on it. But I think they were. And that's probably what really pissed them off about me and why they were willing to cut corners to put me out of business. And why the councilman, instead of acting like a councilman trying to put neighbors and businesses together to work together, decided not point the finger at me and say, you're the bad guy. We're going to use everything we can to crush, kill, and destroy you because you have no rights. We don't care about you. Because once you're gone, I'm going to be able to pound my chest throughout for re-election and say, I shut down that evil coconut globe and all the crime's gone. But that's not the case, as we know.
Okay, we're going to reach out to the phone lines again. We have someone from the 918 area code.
That's interesting. Two calls from Oklahoma.
Interesting.
Hey, I'm Layla again. I just wanted to...
Oh, dear.
Did we just lose Layla?
Yeah.
She's lost, love?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah, these things happen. Okay. I think we've beaten the coconut grove to death.
Why not? Everybody else has.
Sam, just one final note. So, did I hear you say correctly? The Coconut Grove is shut down. You're not doing business there anymore.
No. It's my parents sold it to somebody else who's operating a soul food restaurant there. No booze, no nothing. And he had a dickens of a time reopening it up. I had nothing to do with it. He bought it. Is everybody familiar with what a land contract is? He bought it on a land contract for my parents, and it's almost like they're carrying the mortgage to the landlords. They're the banker, and he's opening up a little soul food restaurant. It took him a year to get all the proper permits and licenses and all that. And he's just starting, he just opened up about a month ago, and I wish him the best of luck. He's a hell of a nice guy.
So you sold out, and you're out of the business now, and I guess that's a happy ending, isn't it? for you.
Well, I'm glad I'm out of it because, you know, to be honest with you, Peter, you know, I knew it was not fun going there through the neighborhood, and everyone knew my car, or picking up money or dropping off valuables, you know, and things of that nature. And, you know, it was getting scary. And, I mean, that's a positive in my life. I don't have the stress of worrying about that because it was a dangerous neighborhood. However, I was making some nice income out of that. Regardless, the hard work paid off. And people, regardless of the race, color, creed, or color, like the food there, like the shoot pool there. They like to eat the food we made there, and the color of the money was green, and I missed that green. It has taken a crimp into my lifestyle financially, and I hope that that will come out, and I will be awarded damages accordingly.
Well, I'm confident you'll get your day in court.
I would certainly hope so, or a settlement day.
Well, Sam, I'm pretty much convinced that they're going to lock you up and throw the keys.
Well, I hope not. I hope not by signing the, we head them off with the pass, as they like to say, by filing the lawsuit. So I don't think they're going to mess with me too much.
Okay.
Can I ask a question, Peter?
Sure.
Knowing that this already seems like there's an awful lot in the deck stacked against him, can he ask that this court case be tried other than the city of Youngstown, like maybe in county court or something like that, that's outside that area where there may not be such prejudicial accusation against Sam to get a fair trial, or does it have to fail first before you do something like that?
Well, let me answer your question by asking Sam a couple of questions. Sam, did you ask for a jury trial?
Yes, we asked for a jury trial.
And do you want to have your jury there in Youngstown try this, or do you want to have another jury try it?
No, we want the jury in Youngstown.
Okay, well, for all practical intents and purposes, Bill, that answers your question because he doesn't want to change. He's more concerned about the jury pool than anything else, and he wants this jury to hear it, and he's entitled to have a jury of his peers hear it. And the bigger picture is you can arrange for a transfer of venue if you can show that you can't get a fair trial in a particular venue, but it's not an easy showing to make. And he could transfer venue. He could ask to transfer venue if he thought that this wouldn't be an appropriate forum for him to get a fair trial. But as I said, it's a tough showing.
Bill, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I've watched too many TV movies. I'm sorry.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a very good question. But, you know, every person and remember, Sam filed the lawsuit, so Sam chose the court. There are rules that prescribe where you're supposed to file. And, Sam, this is also a federal lawsuit. You filed in district court?
No, we filed in Northeast Ohio federal. We were one of the reasons we – and Bill, answer your question, kinda. We didn't file in county court because we felt the county court is in bed with the city government, and therefore we would not get fair treatment from the magistrate or the judge. They probably would dismiss the case.
Yeah.
But in federal court, there is a case similar to ours. Matter of fact, to give some good news, we got there's a case in Warren, Ohio, which is a city north of us, very similar to mine, but different, but similar. And the city of Warren went to dismiss the case. That judge is allowing that case to go forward, based upon some of allowing the case to go forward. And the people are suing the city, the city council, and whatnot, for shutting their bar down after a shooting. It just wasn't a killing there.
Many of these cases. Go ahead, Sam.
What?
I'm sorry.
Nothing. I'm just going to say, the good news is, you know how in the federal court, Peter, you know, it's randomly, the cases are randomly,
randomly assigned upon filing.
Blessedly, we got the judge that's allowed the people to sue the city of Warren. We got that judge. We randomly assigned that judge.
Yeah, most cases I don't know if it's most cases, but many cases that involve charges that state officials, particularly state police, acted beyond their authority and violated Section 1983 of the U.S. Code, they raise federal questions because that's a U.S. code, and frequently those cases are filed in federal court as opposed to state court for all the reasons that Sam mentioned. People believe that they'll get a fairer judge who's a federal judge as opposed to a state court judge, and other factors as well. But you know, Sam.
We're in federal court, and we're happy with the judge we got. We're happy that we're in Youngstown. We don't have to drive to Cleveland or Akron. And so far, so good.
So far, so good.
Okay. I think we're done with this.
Let's today.
Move on to more fertile ground. I get at least an email a week asking me to become a secret shopper. It sounds so simple. You know that these folks, these really nice folks, are going to send me money and pay me to go shopping. Now, reality is somewhat different. And once again, it's Sam. Sam, what did you
Why
do?
Why me? Why me? I will say one thing, though. My favorite double phallic named actor died. Rest in peace, Peter O'Toole. Get it? Double phallic, guys. Okay. The Lawrence Arabia has died. He was a great actor, and if you've never seen Lawrence of Arabia, you should get that movie. So why do you pick it on me today, Simon?
Oh, you're the perfect victim.
Oh, yes, I get a lot of those. I'm not going to get any mystery shopper emails anymore after my diving into my investigative reporting mode hat for Blog of News Network, owned by Simon and Jan Barrett. Thank you very much for hiring me. And the salary you're paying me is much too generous. You're too nice to me. I actually decided to see what these mystery shopper things were. I just had to respond to them. And the fact that they weren't asking for money up front, checking account numbers, credit card numbers, or whatnot, I was very intrigued by it. So I answered my mystery shopper employer online, gave them my full name, my home address, and that was it, and my cell phone. The next day, by priority mail, United States Postal Service, I received a postal money order for about $950 and some odd cents with my instructions to take $150, deposit the money order, take $150 out for my fee, and Western Union the balance to this person in the Philippines. And then I was to write a small critique of the Western Union, how Western Union operated, no more than like 5 or 6 sentences, and to grade the neighborhood that the Western Union is at, and critique the teller, for lack of a better term. Well, I kind of knew it was, so I deposited the check. My bank teller looked at the check and said, it was a postal money order. Said, looks good. I don't see anything wrong with it. Deposit it. And I then got a couple text messages and emails. Are you following the instructions? Did you get the money order? I said, yes, I am. I'm waiting to see if it clears, and then I'll follow through with your instructions. 24 hours later, I got another United States Postal Service priority mail delivered to me with a check for about $2,700, not a money order. They wanted me to, they were going to give me a $50 bonus. I could keep, so I'd have $200 for this one. I was to go to the nearest Walmart, do a money gram from Walmart, and then give a critique of it. Deposited the check in my account. My bank teller, they know me, looked at it, you know, this and that. I've handled bigger checks. I've handled smaller checks. I've handled cash, you know, at the bank. They know me. And so they deposited. And then 2 days later, the bank, then I got a couple text messages. Are you going through, you know, how is your assignment going? And I said, I'm waiting for the check to clear, and then I'm going to abide by the rules and keep my fee. They said, okay. I'd always get the big okay back. Well, 2 days after that, the bank manager called me in and said, hey, these have been altered. And I said, gee, what a surprise. Let me tell you what I'm doing. And they were so kind about what I was doing. They waived the $12 altered check fees or whatnot, or bounce fees, whatever you want to phraseology. And I gave them the information. I kept the return address and all that, and they were going to report it to banking officials. I sent emails and text messages back to my mystery shopper employers and said, hey, your checks are no good. You want to send me some cash? And haven't heard back from them. But the interesting thing is, I got a call from someone at PNC, that's the bank that I bank at, and they said that they're investigating all these scams, that there's at least, they cannot tell you how many people do what I did, but take the money right out of their account right away. They don't wait for the check to be named kosher. Automatically take the money out because it's so green, $50 to $200 to go to do the assignment, and I think they're going to keep getting them and getting them and getting them. And heck, if you're doing one a day, that's $1,400 a week, and you don't have to report it. And these people fall for it. So don't fall for it, everybody. It's a scam.
Okay, the question I have for you is the check look kosher?
Yes. The check or the money order?
The money order.
The money order looked incredibly, like, I don't know if any of you have done United States postal money orders. You know, they're kind of, you know, they're unique. It looked exactly like one of them. A check is a check, right? I mean, we've all seen those. I mean, you know that, but this money order was incredibly like a United States Postal Service money order. But what the mind-boggling thing is, Simon, that Simon has talked about, and I told my wife and the bank manager, I'm going to share with the panel and the listening audience, is it costs $12 to send stuff to the United States Priority Mail. They wasted $24 on me. Okay? Now, if they're doing that to 500 people a day, which they probably are, that's $5,000. That's close to $5,000 a day, or something like that. These people are winning, obviously, because they have to spend real money to get a United States Postal Service Priority Mail sent to my house or anybody else's house. So think of the sheer amount of volume that they're sending out in order to scam people. And it's and I was amazed to find out that if you have a check for $27 and you put $5,000 in your bank account, and you deposit that check and immediately to take advantage of the $200 offering because you're greedy, and you do that, and of course the bank's going to cover the check because you got over $5,000 in it, your account, you're done. Within a week, that $2,700's coming out of your account. You're not going to have $5,000 in your account anymore. You're going to have $2,300 in your account.
Right,
because you've already spent the money, you know, to get the $200, and that's what they said the majority of the people are doing, and they're falling for it because they think it's easy money. By the way, I wrote about this on my Blogger News. Can I plug Blogger News column? I mean,
indeed.
I blogged this, and I warned people out there. If you're desperate for money, to go shovel some sidewalks and go do the old-fashioned way. You're not going to make money on the Internet. It's a scam. You don't have a long-lost relative in Uganda. You don't have any of that. Don't give out your security. You know, there's enough people out there trying to hack you already as it is. But it was an interesting experience. I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I knew what it was coming, and they proved me right. but I was just amazed to find out that that many suckers out there, as P.T. Barnum would say. And they must be good at it because the scam artists, because they are spending real money to send these money orders out to people priority mail.
That is what amazes me. Peter, most scams from our time, you involve complete smoke and mirrors. You know, is it sensible to run a scam that actually can track back to you?
Well, it's not sensible to run a scam, in my opinion. It's not sensible to run a scam that can track back to you. But I think a lot of these people specialize in running scams that are very difficult to trace back to people, and this sounds like another version of it. I'll give you another example of a particular scam, and this might make some people feel better because the victims of the scam were lawyers. And what would happen is a lawyer would get an email from someone overseas, and the email would say, I'm someone overseas, and I have a legal matter that needs to be dealt with in your jurisdiction, and I think you specialize in these things, and I really need you immediately, and I can wire or I can send you a check or wire transfer to you $100,000 or whatever the amount is for the retainer. And many lawyers would fall for this scam. And I think actually the way it would be delivered is there would be a check that was sent. And it was like a cashier's check, only they doctored the check so that when the lawyer deposited the money into the trust account, the bank would immediately honor the funds, but because of the way they had doctored the routing numbers or the bank numbers or something, it would take several days for them to track down the actual account and actually transfer the money. And within a day or two of this transaction, the client would contact them back and say, oh, it's been resolved. Why don't you please deduct what I owe you from the $100,000 and please refund the remainder to this and do it by, you know, wire transfer or something. And the lawyers would do it, and they would find out later that they never actually got the retainer advance that had been given to them, that they had in effect paid money out of their own trust account that was really held in trust for other clients. And this scam operated for quite a while. It involved people overseas and Hong Kong accounts and things like that. But, you know, the moral of the lesson has been told 1,000 times, and if something seems too good to be true, don't do it. And I hear different versions of similar themes. People call me up all the time, and they say, well, you know, I got a check in the mail, and I cashed it, and now they want me to pay it back, and they're charging me exorbitant interest, and they've, you know, they're threatening to sue me and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, just and there are a lot of products that are sold on television and over the Internet and what have you, and they offer you a trial run. You can try it out for, you know, 30 days, and if you don't like it, you can stop. And lots of times people don't remember to cancel it within 30 days, and then they just keep getting charged over and over again. And sometimes they do cancel it within 30 days, and the company still just keeps charging them and charging them and charging them. So, you know, it's a classic story over and over again. Just, you know, beware, be careful, and if something seems too good to be true, don't do it. Read the fine print, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Bill, any thoughts on this?
Well, when you said that this was a potential topic for us, I went out to scambusters.org, and there was a article about mystery shoppers. And they had an author of a book that wrote about Mystery Shopper, that supposedly Mystery Shopper is a legitimate organization. in which companies actually want you to do that. The trade-off is that you don't get money for it. All they want you to do is to report what it is that you experienced. Like if you went to a particular, maybe you went to a Chili's, they want to know that, did you see that the silverware was clean? Did you see that this that the tables were taken care of? Were they the waitresses attentive to their the customers? And that what they got in exchange for that was a free meal, maybe a meals for their family. Maybe it was for a chain of hairstyling places, and you get a free haircut, and so does your wife. Whatever it is, that's the way the mystery shopper is supposed to work. And what people, according to this this article, what people have done is that they've been able to capitalize it by promising big money, whereas the mystery shopping, again, is to report what you observe from going shopping and to compensate you with something from that particular organization in which you're investigating. Again, you know, a free meal. They want to know whether the bathrooms are clean. They want to know that the silverware is clean. That are they being attentive as a customer service? I can send you guys the links if you really want to read up on it. And the organization that the mystery shopper uses is MSPA, which is mysteryshop.org. And that's where all the legitimate is. And the first thing on the front of the page is, you know, how to pretend to how to avoid scammers, because the companies that there are real companies that actually do this. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Sam, are you ready to become a mystery shopper?
I just think, you know, the one Peter was talking about, you know, you think lawyers would be fought. You know, just, I think anybody is suspect in this, especially for greedy. Peter said it, you said it. If it's too good to be true, chances are it's too good to be true. And I think that's a great a motto to have and to do all this sort of stuff, because we it. And daily, I mean, just because you don't have to be a Bernie Madoff to be scamming people. I mean, they're all there. I mean, and I think people, especially in the holiday season, yeah, I bet you it's more than it normally is. And the people are just looking for an easy buck. They want it. They want to believe it. It's too bad they put their own funds at risk and this and that. We hear about scams all the time. You know, I personally wish, you know, was in Mahoney County during the summer, the scam artists out big time on preying on the elderly for repairs, you know, of gutters, you know, this and that. You hear about it all the time. It's so sad. I wish our law enforcement would spend more time, you know, going after that than some of the other things that are more of a priority to them. But I understand funds are limited and, you know, this and that. But just be careful out there, everybody. Just, you know, like I said, you know, you just got to be careful. You know, you can only trust those that you know, and don't put your hard-earned money or your valuables or assets at risk, you know, and whatnot. And I did the bank. I'll find out this week, and I'll report next Sunday. The bank manager is supposed to tell me, you know, because I have the return envelope. I kept the return addresses, obviously, and they have copies of them. They could dying to know. Obviously, there's probably a board of where someone taken for whatnot, and I'm sure these people are so good at what they do, they're one step ahead of the law, if the law is even looking for them. Just be careful. It was a great experience, Simon. Thank you for the assignment.
Peter, quite honestly, I suspect that Sam can start a firefall, if you will. You know, he can bring these people down. Is that a good thing for him to do?
When you say bring these people down, you mean go chase them and sue them and do what?
Well, put them behind bars.
Well, Sam doesn't put anybody behind bars. All Sam could do is report it to law enforcement and, you know, file a report and indicate that he wants to pursue charges. And many times law enforcement with this kind of activity, sometimes they'll pursue it and sometimes they won't. They'll just say, you know, we're too busy. I know this is ironic, but they may say we're too busy chasing, you know, crooks and murderers and whatnot, you know, armed robbers, that sort of thing. And they'll say, you have a remedy to go file a civil suit. I'm not saying they'll definitely do that, but they might. This might be a federal offense if it involves interstate commerce or interstate communications, and that's something else that Sam can do. He can report it to federal authorities. And, Sam, you can also file a lawsuit against them, as you well know. And if you do file a lawsuit against them, you'd have to name precisely who and what they are and where they're located, and you'd have to have your theory of damages and whatnot. And, unfortunately, you'd have to hire a lawyer to do that. And, you know, it's not clear that you would want to incur all that expense to chase them.
I have enough lawsuits.
Yeah, most people. And Sam,
you know, I'm going to let the bank. You know, I think the bank will step up to the plate if they feel, you know, if they feel that, hey, there's something here, and maybe they have their own investigative arm, or they'll take it to. I mean, it's very similar. You know, I don't know if you guys have it in New Jersey, Mississippi, or in California, but we have carnivals and festivals in the summertime around here, and we call them the carnies. Whenever they show up, funny money shows up. You know, and I don't know, and when we get some funny money, I take it to the bank. The bank says that they, you know, they give it to the Secret Service or the Federal Reserve up in Cleveland, and if the authorities think it's worth investigating, they will get back to me. I've never heard
that. Well, Sam, how much, on this particular scam, how much money, if any, did you actually lose?
I lost nothing.
Okay. And so... it wouldn't make sense to sue them because you lost nothing. All you can do is exactly what you did, is just report it to anybody and everybody you think should have be aware of this and who would crack down on this kind of thing, law enforcement, banks, what have you, and then just consider yourself lucky and that you didn't lose your shirt in something like this.
I think my intent, Peter, I think I'll actually do better by talking about it on the radio show, getting the word out, writing a blog for Simon, and get the word out to people, which is the best, educate people is the best thing we can do. I want to educate people and stay away from this stuff. Stay, you know, just as you said, if it's too good to be true, chances are it's too good to be true. And that needs to get out there because obviously people are falling prey to this and the hard-earned money is disappearing. And that's a sad thing to see. Especially in the holiday season for people.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Okay, I need to close this down. I need everyone's closing arguments. Bill, I'm going to start with you. Uh-oh.
Was Bill...
Bill typing, and his silence is deafening. You know, the whole conversation today just reminds me of caveat emptor, which is buyer beware. And I think that it is
absolutely.
I think it's something that holds true in many aspects of our lives, not just scams and whatnot, but you know, everywhere we look and everywhere we turn, in my opinion, people are trying to take advantage of us. Sometimes it's big businesses, sometimes it's small businesses, sometimes it's guys on the street, sometimes it's checks in the mail, sometimes it's any number of things. So, you know, try to be aware of all the ways in which people are trying to finagle you one form or another, and try to do the best you can to protect yourself. I know it's hard, but being aware of these things is the first step.
Peter, I really want to thank you for taking part this afternoon. And I'm going to pick on the infamous Sam Moffey.
I want to thank you for a great opportunity to talk and yak and get also it's very a lot of therapy for me to be able to talk to people like yourselves and people in the audience about what's going on with my own personal lawsuit. It really helps me because if I was a fool, you guys would be the first one to tell me, and that would not make me feel good. I'm looking forward to getting my day in court, as Peter said, and justice will prevail, and hopefully this will never happen. Hopefully I get some money out of it, but also that this will never happen to somebody else again in the city of Youngstown, and or the scam at the same thing on a different level. I hope no one gets scammed out there. I guess I'm getting sentimental in my old age, guys. I'm going to do the best I can to help other people out there, and if that means blowing a trumpet to warn people, I'm going to blow the loudest trumpet around. Thank you for a great opportunity. Always a pleasure talking to you guys, listening to you, and hope everybody has a great good week.
And I'm going to go back to the first person I invited. What's going on?
Are we on now? It got all crackly on my headset here. I appreciate that everyone.
We need a quick wrap up.
Thanks for sharing pieces of your personal lives with me. And again, I hope our listening audience learned something. We all make mistakes, and hopefully they can avoid the kind of scams and other problems that we've firsthand experienced. Have a great week, you all.
Perfect. You all. All right. I'm the one that lives in the South. I want to thank my panel for taking time out to talk to me today, and we'll be back next weekend. Until then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. Till next time, goodbye.